Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome back to Podnuts Pro. This is show number 86, and I am Marvin B., and I am here with our guest, Mr. Matt Rainey. Hello, Matt. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
And I'm here with Martin Obando. Mr. Obando, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for asking. How are you doing, Marvin?
I'm doing pretty good. I had a good week. Had a weekend of golf and rest.
Golf. So were we off this week, or is that the weekend?
That was the weekend.
I gotcha.
And it was a tournament that I committed to. I usually do two or three tournaments a year. So that was one that I had committed to a while back, and for my high school. So did a quick drive home and had a nice round of golf. Almost won 2 tickets to Disney.
Because you were so good?
Because I'm that good.
Are you a regular golfer?
Regular as in every year, yes.
Every year? Okay.
Well, no, but that was actually a putting contest that I sank the putt during the contest, and then another gentleman also sank the putt, so we had to do a playoff later in the day, and he beat me by a couple of measly inches.
Ah. Oh, well. I'm sure you go to Disney quite often anyway, being that you live so close to it.
I go to Disney about as much as I go to the beach.
Okay. I'm going to imagine that's a lot.
Me too. That's what I'm going to guess too. I'm pretty pale, so I don't go to the beach very often.
So that was my weekend. But the week was pretty good too. And how was your guys' week and weekend?
It was good. It was pretty slow, which I like. So not much going on, just enjoying the beautiful weather. We've been having nice weather for about a month. After the flood, we've had nice weather. You know, low 80s, mid 80s, not a cloud in the sky for weeks.
I think Moses said that too.
Yeah, no, my weekend was good. It's the end of band season here for marching band competition. So it was a sunny Saturday. And so what that usually involves is a couple of days, if not a day before, I'm loading up a full 26-foot U-Haul, driving it to wherever it needs to go, unloading it, starting it, 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, depending on where we're at, and then, spending all day doing that, and then at the end of the day, we pack it all back up, take it back, and we unload it. So depending on where we're going, how we're, where the competition is. Some days it's a 50-hour day, other days it's a, I think it was almost a 24-hour day last weekend again. So, and that's pretty normal. So we have one more competition, and it's the weekend. It's going to rain this weekend, so that makes it even longer because we can't put all the tents away. We have about 165 feet worth of tents that we have to put up, and we got to put them all away dry, so we have to lay them all back out.
And you're describing this as a good weekend?
I'm with my kids. They're, okay. They're playing. It was sunny last weekend, so this weekend we're going to put them all away. But then it's the end of the weekend or the end of the marching band competition. All of the 14 props that I deal with every time, we're taking them out on Sunday and going to have a big bonfire with them. And probably some roasting of some marshmallows and some hot dogs and some shooting. So that's my Sunday coming up.
Oh, that doesn't sound too bad.
Yeah. But my week has been awful.
Awful?
Yeah, well, it's just been one of those weeks where nothing has worked out right. Just timing of a lot of projects didn't work out right, both in business and in personal. And always feeling like I'm just letting somebody down all the time. And that's always it kind of wears on you.
All right, so here's what we'll do. Martin, you get to go in the middle because you had such a downer week. And Matt and I will go first and last, and that way we'll start on a good note and end on a good note.
you don't want to depress our listeners. They're already looking for a way out.
So I will start by saying Rainey, you told us last week of your networking story that where you had the incorrect gateway because the person couldn't ping across the VPN.
Yes, missing gateway. Right.
Missing gateway. So I had a scenario where I had a customer that I had been watching their backups for a while, and they weren't uploading to the cloud. And I know the device is working because it's also their NAS drive. And obviously, if they're able to open files and work, the NAS drive is working. And it's one of those devices, well, it's one of those networks where I don't have a server or an admin station on premise. So I had to call them and say, look, when you guys leave, can you leave one of the stations on? I'll connect in, check it out. and got into the NAS. Everything was fine. I'm looking around. I'm trying to figure out what's going on. I called tech support. He and I both, have him remote into the station I'm on. We go in. They're trying to backdoor, and all he can do is, well, you're going to have to go on site and do a hard reset and, you know, make sure all their data's backed up. And I'm like, oh, I can't do all that. So we set up a ticket. He's going to contact me the next day. So I figured, let me just poke around again. So I go to a page, look at the network settings, and guess what I saw in the network settings?
I'm guessing no gateway. But a lot of times I see this happen, and the network is set to the public or some other kind of network setting that's not talking right.
No. In this case,
incorrect subnet. I'm
sorry, did you want to?
My guess is incorrect subnet.
Nope.
Well,
this is, it was funny because when I went back and looked at when the last backup was done, it was done on a date that Comcast came out and gave them new internet. And I remember giving the gentleman the IP information. And so when he went in to put in the IP information for this device, he put in the static IP for the NAS, which ended at a .1.240. He put in the gateway. I'm sorry, he put in the subnet as a 255, 255.255.0. And then he put in the gateway ending in 1.240.
There you go.
Yep.
So he didn't even put in his own correct gateway as the same IP address as the device itself.
Well, he had the number written down, so he's probably looking at it and just typed it again. Just
yeah.
Or he probably thought, I don't know why this guy told me to put this as a gateway, but whatever, he must know what he's doing. I'm just going to put it.
Yeah.
So
that was interesting. Just, you know, these darn gateways.
I know, right? And you probably thought of my story. You said, look at that. I'm seeing the same thing again.
Well, it's funny because that was story number one that ties back into last week. Story number two is we also talked about MX Toolbox.
Yep, use that today again.
So I used it today because when I woke up this morning, I had an MX Toolbox email sent to me at 4:59 a.m. that one of my customers was on a blacklist. So I got into their network. They're actually one of my managed service clients. I went into my RMM tool, and basically what had happened was there were four computers where they just ignored the fact that we had managed antivirus for them, that they decided to install their own stuff. And so it deactivated my managed antivirus and put on their crap.
So they're using AVG, huh?
So, well, they're using a free something and then a Norton something.
Yeah.
And I just told them, I said, okay, here's what I've got to do. All the other machines that I know are on our managed antivirus are fine. I need to go into those four machines. So those people need to go find something else to do this morning. Let me go in. So I ripped their crap out, put mine back on, put on my D7 tool so I could run through all my malware checks. And I had just started the third station when I got an email from the MX Toolbox saying, you have been removed from the blacklist.
Very nice.
So what was the cause of the blacklist? Was one of those sending out mail?
Yeah, well, it wasn't sending out mail, but there were two that were heavily, heavily infected.
Okay.
With some crap.
So they were on the blacklist where that is sending out traffic, and they just reported as bad traffic coming from that IP address.
Right.
Yep. So they block them on, they put them on the blacklist thinking, hey, they might start spamming us too.
Right. And this is one of the ones, it's actually the RO, abuse.ro. So they weren't actually, you know, being blocked mail yet, but they got a poor reputation.
Oh, yeah. Yep, yep. Well, I had something similar this morning. I have a similar alerting system. So you got an email from MX Toolbox that they want a blacklist. I have a similar alert system for this client. When they get a blacklist, they call me, and I get alerted to it when they call me. So
that's a good system.
Yeah, it works. It's pretty good. I can talk to a person that way, right? So the same thing. They called me this morning. Well, first they tried to email me that they were on a blacklist. And then they realized that they shouldn't email it. They can't email. And they called. And checking on them, their blacklist was a little different. I looked it up on MX Toolbox. And it came back and said, basically, your ISP doesn't allow mail to go out on this IP range, which is and when I see that, I know that something happened with the block. It wasn't just my client's IP; it was the whole subnet. So usually, something goes on with the subnet where maybe it was marked as a dynamic range, and it's actually a static range, and you shouldn't have mail coming from a subnet designated as a dynamic range, which I've seen before. So I actually called the ISP, since it was the whole subnet, and believe it or not, they were very helpful.
What?
Were they Comcastic?
It was not Comcast, but they were. There's, I don't know if a suitable substitute, but anyway, they were helpful. She knew what I was talking about. She looked up herself what blacklist they were on, and she saw the same thing I saw, the two blacklists. She saw it was a whole subnet, and she said, "You know what? We're gonna take care of this for you. We're gonna submit. We have a login. We can submit it, and if we submit it from the ISP level, it's usually faster and better." So within an hour, they were off. She actually did it. The first person I talked to, I waited a minute, talked to a person, she looked it up, had it fixed. I was shocked.
Wow, that's awesome.
Usually they're like, blacklist, have you done an antivirus scan?
Have you rebooted your computer? Yeah.
Have you rebooted? Can you reset the router back to defaults?
Were they file-tastic?
It's a local ISP that does fiber. That's actually the local utility system.
Gordon Lightspeed?
Flash Gordon?
And it's one of the few in the country where it's actually controlled by the utility system, and it's fiber, and it was like a nationwide news when it first happened, but I think other utility systems might have their own fiber now, but we were one of the first ones to roll this out. And yeah, they were very helpful. I was very shocked, and I'm guessing because they're smaller, but I tried to call a big ISP. I'm sure it would have been transferred to this department, transferred to this department, disconnected a few times, call back.
Well, I find that sometimes the smaller ISPs give you a lot better service. One of my clients who's here locally, they're the one that is a client that has main office here in Portland. They've got offices in the Bay Area, but they have a ranch out in the country. They're that small mom and pop ISP out there. Their default routers are the Ubiquiti Lite routers. So when they go to your house and they deploy the system, their network to your house, they leave you with a Ubiquiti Edge router as their default router. And I thought that was odd.
Well, I also have a smaller ISP that I work with that's in a city next to us, and I do not have good experience with them. They are terrible. There's
the bare wires hanging out of the wall. Ta-da! There you go.
They don't have a clue what's going on. They can't hook up anything correctly. And so it's a nightmare when they call, need to change something or something's not working. But that's typical. But this ISP, and I've dealt with them before, but never for this kind of instance. Normally, when I deal with them, it's pretty quick anyway. But a blacklist, I thought, well, they're gonna have some excuse. But no, they just did it.
Wow, awesome.
Yeah, very nice.
All right. So, So we had some good stories. Martin, did you want to tell one of your downer stories?
Sure. Well, since we're on the ISP. Train. I got a call from, so I've been working with a couple clients, and this client, his wife needed some work at their house. And he happened to be in India. So she called me, and she said, you know, can we schedule a time that me and my son are going to be home because our internet's not working. We had Frontier come out. They have Fios. We had them come out, and it's not working. I spent 2 hours on the phone. They can't fix it. Can you come take a look? And I said, well, this was Friday night. I said, I'm not going to be available until Monday to come out and do it, or Sunday. And they said, well, that's not going to work. How about Monday? Monday works great. So I show up Monday morning and I walk in, and I don't know if this is all over the place or just here, but I'm going to assume it's all over the place. For my Fios, I just have a little white box as my modem, cable modem, if you will. It's all it is a converter. Cable comes in, Ethernet comes out. That's all it is. It's not one of the standing all-in-one wireless boxes that you get. Okay. So that's what I have. I also have the standing all-in-one box with the wireless and the router and the switch and everything all built in. I have actually two of those because they keep sending to me, and they're in my closet. So I go on site to this, and I see both of those boxes hooked up, plugged in, plus an external I've never seen this, but it's a Frontier little external adapter that has wireless, and it's a little two-port switch on it. So I don't know if you guys have ever seen that, but I walked in and all of them were plugged in. They were all looped together, oddly, funny, weird. Everything was blinking in, all the ports were blinking in unison. So the tech who was on site, who kept tweaking and adjusting and tweaking and looking at a computer and messing with things, and he broke it all. And so all I did was I unplugged one box, redid the cable so it was lined up right, and it worked. So I was there for maybe 5 minutes, if that. And most of that was just talking. I walked over and I said, use this stuff, unplug this stuff, and it all came back up. And they were very frustrated because they had spent hours with the tech on site and hours with people on the phone and couldn't get it fixed. And the tech on site created a loopback.
So that was their tech that came out and created the loopback?
Yes.
Well, so did you send a bill to the ISP?
No, I was there. I wasn't there very long. They're good friends. I'm probably not going to send a bill to them. One of those ones I'll just be like, okay. Write that one off.
That is, it's always frustrating to go up after somebody and have to deal with all that.
Right. So I've got one of the quiz show questions in for you guys, since you guys keep bringing them. So I have a client. He has this company has a VPN, and up until last week, this gentleman could VPN in successfully, and then could access the company shares successfully. This week, he VPNs in successfully, but cannot access the company shares. I can go in VPN in successfully, and I can access the company shares.
So do we have an answer for this already? Or are we just?
Oh, yeah. No, it's all right. I fixed it within. Okay. It was already fixed within like 3 to 5 minutes.
Okay.
So one of the things that I do when I set up a company that I know that they may or may not have any kind of VPN is not use the home router IP addresses. So when he VPN'd in last week, his home IP address was something other than the same IP address as the server at this company. So this week when he VPNs in, his computer and the server were exactly on the same IP address range, or on the had given the same IP. He got one from his dynamic router. I have one statically, and it's a .1.11. And so when he tried to get to the server through the VPN, it was timing out because his computer was that IP address.
Is this software-based VPN or hardware-based?
It's through Ubiquiti. So he's just using the VPN on his Windows. That's just the program he's using. But he was getting a valid IP address. So he was getting a valid IP address from the network, from the company coming into him, but his physical IP address for on his local LAN was the same as the remote for the server. So when he tried to access it, he couldn't.
So with those devices that you're the VPN endpoint, is it about the same subnet as the server?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So the server was .111. He was .111, and the IP and the VPN he got from the server from his host was .1.200 or whatever. So I had to take his computer and move it outside of that range. I just gave it a static IP address. It's a computer that stays at his house. I just gave it a static IP address. I gave it a high number, 1.251 or whatever. And now he can access 1.11 without ever stepping on toes.
I see. See, the WatchGuard that we use when we do the mobile VPN, we can assign a different subnet for the VPN. So when it gives out a VPN address, it's not on the same subnet as the main network you're connected to.
Right.
But yeah, I've seen those in the past. And that's, again, why shouldn't people? I don't like to put, 192.168.1. whatever for the networks that we set up, because you can run into that all the time.
I've seen that actually a couple times, so I'm in the same boat. So that's just thinking somebody, if you're listening, moving forward and you're looking at setting up a business, keep it outside of the 192.168 range. Just do something else, because you never know when something's going to, when something's going to step on itself.
Yeah, so you can use, we use 192.168, but I'll do 192.168.20.20.25.30. Not the .1.
Right.
And I don't even like .10, because .10 is common or zero. So I don't use 192.168.0.x, 1.x, or 10.x.
Right.
Or six. Well, no, I guess you can do 16, the SBS range. But
I never leave that in default for the SBS, though.
Yeah. Well, and Comcast up here uses 10.1.10 and 10.1.0. So I don't use those. I don't use those either. But if you're going to mess with a 10 range, then you have a whole lot of, I mean, you have a whole lot of options to do. And, you know, because you can create yourself a class A IP address, and then use a class C subnet and then limit it out if you wanted to do that. So that gives you some more options. So you can make it 10.100.12.1, you know, with a class C subnet. So now it's just completely random and you'll never step on toes.
Right. I'm looking up, I have a client, we didn't set them up, but I'm looking up their IP because they have a strange IP scheme. And I'm pulling it up right now because I had to connect to them the other day. I thought, what is happening here? if I can remember the name of the client, that would help, I think.
Smith. Johnson. Boulder Dash. Nothing.
Okay, so I can't find it, but I can tell you that their range was one, the one I connected to was 1.2.5 dot something.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
Is that even legal?
It's not standard.
But I mean, I know there's legalities between public and private networks, and that's definitely not a...
No, it's not a standard class A, B, or C.
Right. Can you get, I mean, are there legal issues if you just randomly throw that together on an inside of a network?
And I don't think there's anything legal. I think it sometimes your routing may not work. I know on the WatchGuard, here we go. Yeah, 1.33.7.x is what they're using. I know on the WatchGuard, it wouldn't route that by default. You'd have to go in there and say, I want you to route the 1.37. You know, whatever subnet, because it wouldn't route it correctly. It wouldn't know what it was. But yeah, I wouldn't suggest use something strange like that. But a 192.168.33. .50.60.x would be good. Speaking of SBS, do you have any clients running SBS 08?
Yes.
Yep.
Do you have people having problems with remote web workplace on Windows 10?
Oh.
Oh, yes.
Well, I've got remote web workplace all the time. I restart IIS.
Okay, so if you do, you get that error, right? The VB script error. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
You know how to fix that, right? I came across that the other day.
Well, actually, wait a minute. You said the VBS script.
Right.
The error that we get, we have to switch to compatibility mode and add their private whatever that setting is.
So on Windows 10 and SBS 08, most of the time they'll get a VB script remote desktop connection error. And I've came across this a few times. I had one client call and said, I can't do it. So they didn't tell me that they went to Windows 10 on their home computer because I connected and worked fine. Of course, I have to tell them, make sure you use Internet Explorer and not Edge.
Right.
And make sure you put in compatibility mode, put it in trusted sites, blah, blah, blah. But she still couldn't connect. So I had to connect to her home computer and saw she had Windows 10. Works on Windows 7, 8, just not on 10. So if you have Windows 10 computers connecting, maybe we'll have... If we have show notes, I'll email them to y'all for the show notes. But there's a file you have to edit on the server, and it's the tsweb.aspx file, and that is under C Program Files, Windows Small Business Server, Bin, Web App Remote Folder. And when you go in there, it's kind of hard to explain. There's a couple of lines that you have to mark out. Basically, just put the little a little apostrophe or a comma, whatever it is, just mark it out so it doesn't. Because that what that line says is basically, if you're connecting from any of these clients, give an error, and that's what it does. So if you mark that out, restart the terminal server client or terminal services server on the server, they'll be able to connect. I had this twice last week, and I forgot to mention it last week, and that'll work.
Okay, yeah, I'll make sure show notes get put in.
Speaking of Windows 10, how do you guys feel about Microsoft staying true to their word and not selling any more Windows 7, even to the OEMs?
They finally stood by their word once, huh?
I mean, well, I purchased 7 computers with Windows 7 over the last week.
Well, yeah, they're still in distribution, but they're not sending any more. So at some point over this next month or so, your vendor may run out of Windows 7 pre-installed stations. They're not shipping any more new ones.
And that's fine with me.
So none of your clients have compatibility issues?
Oh, yeah, they do.
Have to stay on Windows 7?
Oh, yeah, they have compatibility issues.
What choice do we – I mean, what choice do we have, though?
But most of the time they have compatibility issues because they don't want to upgrade their software.
Right.
Not because they can't, because they don't want to. And the software is brand new, in their mind, 10 years old. They shouldn't have to replace it so soon.
So you're not stocking up on Windows 7 machines?
No. No, I'm not.
I bought a few.
Well, the problem is we go through so many computers. I mean, we might order 5-10 a week, and I'm not going to stock 50 computers. So,
no, that's all I ordered. I ordered 5 today, and I may order another 5 next week. And basically, I've got 2 customers that are going to have issues because their line of business app won't support Windows 10, and now I just get to go and tell them, okay, these are the last computers that I have, and there will be no more after that, so you are going to have to update your program if you want to keep adding people, or fixing a crashed computer or whatever. Just, you know, when you deal with law firms and, you know, it's 100 plus people, they tend to be a little slow.
So those, I would probably tell them, if you don't, you need to buy some extra computers and keep them in your office. As opposed to me stocking them, if you want them now while they're available, buy 10, keep them in your stock room, keep them in your parts room, wherever, for the client. Not like you buy them, Marvin, your client buy them and keep them in his office. They buy them, they store them, and when you need them, you boot them up.
Right. Well, that's one of the reasons. I went ahead and bought those just so I have them, and now I can go to tell them. I say, look, these are all I have. If you want these, buy them.
There are no more left, so these will only be $6,000 a piece.
Right. Well, I don't buy that. I mean, it's kind of surprising that I currently have, you know, 6 computers sitting in my hallway. Actually, literally in my hallway in my office. That doesn't happen very often. So my clients, you know, we kind of go through spurts of you know, buying computers and not. So if I bought 5 computers and held onto them, they could be sitting here for a year.
Right, and that's not good because if you boot them up and they're dead or something happens to them, the warranty started when you got it.
It's just extra stuff that I have to worry about, and then it's in, you know, it's sale, it's what is it, inventory, and I just don't deal with that. So
now you could still, if you got a volume license for Windows, it's have rights to Windows 7 if they really needed to.
Yeah, well, remember I told you how they got upset when they realized they were paying twice as much for an office license when they purchased the volume license?
Well. So sometimes I get upset with that, but I tell them you actually have 2 licenses, right? One terminal server, one office or home, but you also can move from computer to computer.
Right.
So if your computer dies, the license doesn't die with it. And I tell them that, and they're usually okay with it, because I tell them the reason that it's reduced price for the OEM is because it lives with this computer. If this computer dies, the license dies with it.
Yeah.
They sometimes complain until they realize, hey, I got a new computer. Can you load Office? Yes, I can, because you had an open license, a volume license. And they get happy. Then they're happy. They're happy years later.
So, yeah, so that's a good idea. So stock up on Windows 7 computers, make your customers buy extra Windows 7 computers. Make them buy volume licenses, and then you'll be good.
Yeah, it's hard to get clients to buy extra stuff. I mean, in my experience, they don't want to be down. And when their computer goes down, they want it back up within a couple of hours. At the same time, they don't want to buy a spare computer to have. You know, if they got 10 computers in the office, why not buy one spare?
At least one.
But
that's something to think about. I just got an email today from one of my clients who's actually in education, which is nice. And she says, I just found out we have $15,000 to spend on network and technology. Wow. Oh, that's a good place to be in.
Did you say, let me help you spend it?
I said, wow, let me give some thoughts on that. And so I'm like, well, we could upgrade the teacher's computers. We could upgrade our office to everybody going around the thing. We upgraded their watch guard and everything all that last year. So it's like, this is the same.
You can give me a bonus for all the great work I've done for you over the year?
It doesn't have to be great work just because I'm pretty.
You say, what a coincidence. My rates just went up.
Yeah, exactly. I'm $15,000 now. I can help you spend that really quick. You know, you don't want to lose it.
I suggest you pre-buy bulk hours
or Windows 7 licenses.
Oh, there you go. pre-buy $15,000 worth of service.
Oh, I did have one client double pay me last month, and that's always painful because then they say, well, we don't want a credit. We'd like you to write us, you know, our $1,000 check back. I'm like, okay.
And so that'd be awesome because if they're slow pay, you can give them the same treatment. They can call you 16 times. Then you tell them, I thought I had mailed it. Let me check my records and get back to you.
No, I don't remember writing a $15,000 check. Yeah, that one I'd remember.
I love it when the shoe is on the other foot for clients who were slow pay, and then they call.
Oh my gosh, I'm totally fighting that right now. I have a lot of out there in outstanding balances. I cannot get them to pay me, but yet
do they call for service?
They don't, because one of them has actually sold his business, and so that's kind of a long process of, well, I'm not going to pay you because the company's going to pay you when they get everything done. So that's all. But there's a couple out there that I've had to knock on the door a couple times and say, hey, I need some help here. They overpay you by $20. They're like, yeah, if you could write that check and get that in the mail to me.
Why are they overpaying you $20?
Well, they're not. They overpaid me almost $900.
And how do they do that? Did two people write the same check?
No, one person paid by credit card and the other person sent me a check.
I just assumed that was a tip.
So what we would end up doing was saying, well, what if we, instead of me writing you that refund check now, what if we finish out the month, then we'll take it out of what you owe me for the month, and then I'll just write you the refund and difference. And they said, okay, that worked out well. So then turning around and writing a $250 check was a lot easier.
Yeah, if they're a normal client, I'd say I'm just going to give you credit.
Well, I asked them that. I said, would you like to keep it credit? And they said no. They said, we're kind of under some
financial... See, I would just delay sending the check back until we caught up and say, oh, look, now we're caught up. It's a good thing I didn't send that check in.
Yeah, our 30-day cycle for writing checks just started yesterday.
Right. I'm sorry, that's net 60. I'm going to get back to you on that. I only sign checks every other month.
I'm the only one who signs checks.
Then my pen's out of ink, and I can't find an envelope. And
it was a mess. I had to go to Costco. And
have you tried to find a stamp lately?
And then you can deduct your time for sending it back to them out of the check. Why is it $100 less? Well, it took me an hour to go to the store, get a stamp. I had to go to the post office.
Because you asked me to write you a check. That's why.
I had a bill for all that. I mean, it's not fun. If it's not fun, it must be working. I got to bill somebody.
That's right. It's not a yes or no question. I got a cramp in my hand. That took some time. $45 for a masseuse.
So here's a question. Let's go back to the quiz portion of the show. So when was the last time either of you saw a 9-pin VGA cable?
A 9-pin VGA cable.
Don't Google it.
Yeah, what's a 9-pin VGA cable?
I don't know when the last time I've seen one of those. A 9-pin VGA?
Yes.
It's been a while.
I actually saw one 1998.
Is that for a POS system or something? What is that for?
It was something weird. I actually had to order a special cable. So I had a customer a couple of weeks ago tell me that they needed a VGA cable because the doctor was going to be doing a presentation and we needed to bring the cable for the projector. So I sent them, two VGA cables. I sent them one regular VGA extension cable, and then I also sent the regular VGA monitor cable with the two male ends on both sides, just for giggles, because I know that there's been one time out of 100 where some projector didn't have the right female end. So I've always just sent the two cables and said, you should use this one, but here's another one just in case. So they called this afternoon and said, no, these are wrong. We need a 9-pin VGA cable. And I said, there are no 9-pin VGA cables. And they said, well, this company says that they've been using it for quite a while. And I said, you mean like 20 years?
Yeah.
And she said, well, could be. It turns out it's a rotary clock that has had this projector forever.
Wow.
So did you find the model price?
No, I didn't find it at all. They're going to come up with another way to do the presentation.
Oh, really? It's just a certain model price has that, I think.
Are you sure? Because I did a quick search for about 5 minutes and said, no, I can't find it. Because even still, I would have had to overnight it, and it would have cost, $40 to overnight it. Probably $20 for a special cable.
Yeah, it's time to get a new projector.
I thought about that. I was like, why don't I just send you a projector?
The cable is going to be 500. New projector is going to be 400. Which one do you want? Yeah, wow. I had somebody call me today that their iPad wasn't booting up right. I was working off for a little while. It wasn't booting up. And I said, okay, what model is this? It's an original iPad. Original 16 gig iPad. I said, okay, we spent enough time on this. Go buy a new one. I think that one's had its useful life. It's time to put it to bed now.
Yeah.
Don't need to work on these old things.
How heavy was that thing?
It was remote. I was having to do stuff. And those things are heavy because actually my wife still has one. I gave her my old one.
So iOS 10 now on the iPhones won't allow you to connect to an open wireless. Oh. I have a...
What? That can't be right.
Nope. It's so we're going back to the ranch now where I had to, you know, where they give you free wireless, the Ubiquiti Edge routers. Okay, we're going back to the ranch. This is a cattle ranch, smack dab in the middle of 640 acres. I have to make this super simple for the aging owner who lives out there, him and his wife. I have to make this simple. So they live in the middle of nowhere. So I make their wireless open because nobody's going to jump on it. Makes it easy when the kids go out there and do their stuff. Right, the owner goes out this weekend for some hunting for last week. Last week goes out last week, texts me and says, Martin, my iPhone gives me an error saying that it will not connect to an open wireless, and it tells me it must be encrypted. So what iOS 10 now does is if you take your iPhone and you try to connect to an open wireless, even though you have maybe a captive portal on it, maybe you're doing encryption on the back end, if there's no key in the WPA2 or, you know, key, it will not allow you to make a connection. Huh. It just doesn't connect it. And it says you should put a password on this.
Yeah, see, it says open network provide no security and expose all network traffic. Configure your router to use WPA2 personal AES security type for this network.
And then it won't let you connect.
There's no option at all to...
None. It doesn't let you bypass it. So he could not use his phone while he was at the cabin hunting in the middle of nowhere because there wasn't a password on the wireless router. Because you do not get cell service out of this cabin.
So what version are you on specifically? Because I have 10.1 and it's still letting me connect to a captive portal.
But no. So do you have a password on your wireless?
No.
Oh, maybe 10.1 fixed it because this was just... I don't know what version he has. I know it's 10.
And I know there's a new one ready for me to download. I just haven't done it yet.
So maybe they fixed it. I will touch bases with him again this week.
Yeah, try. Well, this person says a turn off. Two people say it's turn off cellular data, then open a browser and they say in quotes force it to use Wi-Fi and it works.
Okay. So he was 6.5 hours away from me by car, so I couldn't just zip over there and take a look at it.
But it is strange that it even comes up.
Yeah. And, you know, you think about all these places that, you know, you look at like OpenMesh or you know, any of the advanced, the higher end routers where you can put a captive portal on it. You can, you know, you can segregate, you can segregate IPs for so nobody can see each other's IP address and then not put a password on it and you're still going to get an error, potentially. It sounds like Marvin's not doing that. So I don't know. I just think that's an interesting move by them. I mean... So
that is odd, but especially if it's a captive portal.
This one didn't have a captive portal.
Because here's the thing. I mean, you're going to have to go into coffee shops and McDonald's and, you know, you're not going to be able to connect.
Right.
Unless they put a password on their captive portal. They don't want the password. They want you on their portal.
Right. They want your business. And if people go in and if all these people go in to Starbucks, which I know is ran by AT&T now, that does not have a password on their Starbucks wireless.
Starbucks go out of business.
Right. You're going to have all of the, especially in the Pacific Northwest, all these hipsters with their iPhones are going to go somewhere else.
Seattle's Best Coffee?
Maybe.
Is that still around?
Yeah, it's still around.
So I'm looking at this and all the articles I'm seeing in this brief search say that it's a warning.
See, that's what I thought too, but I couldn't. He said, I can't get around it.
I see a screenshot, so I don't see any way to get around it. You know, it should say connect anyway, but it doesn't. It says it's a warning, but it's a warning that doesn't really let you go any further.
And I don't have an iPhone to test with, so.
Mine connects.
I don't buy a device for all my clients so I can test with them. I don't have the money.
That's why I just get an iPhone.
He did say, the owner said, I'm about ready to get rid of this iPhone and go with an Android. And I said, I can help you with that one.
But if Apple does it, Android is going to be right behind it saying, hey, we can do that too.
Then I will probably end up helping my customers root all their phones.
Yeah, so that's interesting. I'm going to have to look into that. There's got to be maybe 10.1 fixes it. But Marvin, you can connect and browse?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And to be honest, we did that at one of my medical offices specifically, where they wanted a captive portal without the password so that, you know, people go in, they go to their website, they can browse all the products and the procedures. I mean, those guys upgrade. You know, anytime there's an update, they do it right away. So they're probably on whatever this next update is that I haven't done yet.
Well, if anybody has any information for that, email us podnutspro@podnuts.com. And I'm going to try and test this week. And I have the newest OS on the phone as well. So,
and I can swing by the office. He's now back locally, and swing by the office and see what happens. I can turn off their wireless in their office and test it locally, see what actually comes up.
Interesting. It's interesting. It's nice to see they're being so secure.
You know what? I have to take that back. My version is 10.0.2. I have 10.1.1 ready to download and install, and I haven't done it yet.
10.0.2?
Yes.
And you do not get that error.
I do not get the error. Now, I do get the warning if I go into the Wi-Fi settings to look to see. It does give me that security recommendation that says unsecured network, open networks provide no security and expose all traffic. Configure your router to use WPA2 personal AES security. So, I mean, it gives the warning, but I can still connect and browse.
So it shows a warning, but it still connects.
Right.
Okay, so maybe he just got the warning and said, ah, and never connected.
Oh, yeah.
Because then he was hunting, and by the time we got a chance to get a hold of him, he's like, yeah, I'm going to be leaving in like 3 hours, so forget it.
Okay, so it sounds like if that's the case, it actually is connecting. He just thought it wasn't because that thing popped up.
I mean, I can still get to the Facebook, so.
Well, then that's it. Facebook, have you tried Yahoo? Just, I mean, because that's the other one.
Yeah, I'm on, Yahoo, Tim Tebow on Marriage and Family.
So, yeah. Let's see, what about Bonsai Buddies, the other one I usually check?
That's the gold standard.
That's right. If you can get a Bonsai Buddy, then the internet is up, it's working.
Oh, Bonsai Buddy?
I don't know, whatever.
Every common
misspelling of Google, I try all of those too.
Bonsai Buddy.
Do Google with one O.
What is this? This is some purple looking. This looks like Peanut from Jeff Dunham's show.
Repair coupon printer. I usually Google for that.
Did you know Google with one O redirects to the regular Google page?
So they bought that, huh? Goggle.
Well, try Google with three O's.
Three O's? Let's try it. This is live. this is riveting. Google. Well, that redirects too.
Try it with four O's.
One, two, three, four. Let's see. Do they? I wonder how far they went. Oh, that one doesn't.
Oh, quitters.
I was going to say, if it connected, we need to put a test out to the users and anybody. How many O's before you can't connect to Google?
How many O's does it take to not go to Google?
Apparently three. Four.
Four.
It breaks four. Oh.
Now, if you go five, you get the Urban Dictionary.
Really?
One, two, three, four. Yes. Google with two extra O's, a common mistake by lazy typers typing too fast.
Boy, they're really labeling these people. Lazy. they just call you lazy.
Six O's takes you to just a landing page that Woot warns you about.
I mean, if you're lazy, how do you get to four?
If you're lazy, wouldn't you just use Siri and say, go to google.com?
That's right.
Oh, 7 has a funky landing page. Actually, it looks like Google.
Google should have just bought all these up. I'm going to go and find the first one that's not redirected and buy it.
Eight takes you to a web page that says, Google with 8 O's, better search results. Several just months ago.
Don't go to Google.
Several months ago, we had a contest to come up with good use of this domain. The winner of the contest suggested we create a better search engine. At first, we dismissed this as a pipe dream. We're all fans of Google, and beating them with their own game seemed like an impossibility. But then we started to think about it, and we saw the opportunity. And yeah, apparently, if you Google with eight O's is a better search engine than actually Google with two O's.
Well, I'm just going to switch up my search engine so that. All right, that was fantastic.
So Google with 10 O's gets you to goglago.com.
But if you registered the one with 10s with 10 O's, what if you're lazy and typed 11?
Okay, so this show, you ladies and gentlemen, you are experiencing the best of Podnets Pro.
Three high-end techs trying to figure out how many O's make a better Google search engine. And we found it. It's eight. And that is the title of today's show, Google with eight O's, better search engine results. I do have to say that Podnets does not endorse that website at all. Use at your own risk.
Oh, man.
Okay, so I have a tip before we get to an email.
You can't get any better than what we just went through.
Yeah, we got to drop the mic.
That's it.
We have a stack of emails, and I have a tip.
Right.
Okay.
All right, let's refocus here. Not that this is much of a focus. This actually is a tip to waste more time.
so on time, buddy.
You can learn to be lazy and waste time on this show.
Okay, so check if you like a nerdy game, check out ZTY.PE. So it's like Z-type. ZTY.PE. It's a shooter game, but the way you fire your missiles is by typing words. So things will come down from the top of the screen, like little enemy ships, and not have a word attached or underneath it. You got to type the word to shoot that ship, and the goal is to, of course, shoot all the ships.
So it's Galaga for computers?
Well, yeah. So but you don't go side to side. You just type. You just type and so if one word's impossible, the actual word is impossible, you have to, if you hit I, you've got to finish that word before you can choose another word to fire on. That makes sense. You can't just hit random letters. You've got to actually type the word out, and then you can switch the word next word, maybe faith, or, you know, if you want to waste a few minutes, it's pretty fun.
Except for the fact that I just had my microphone, my headphones on really loud, and I hit start. Oh, sweet mercy, it scared me.
So I usually always have my speakers on mute, so I never actually hear the music.
Except for the fact that I'm talking with you guys, so I want to be able to hear you, and I hit start, and it makes a very loud noise. And
it does. So turn it on mute if you're going to play, if you don't want people to hear it. I think I've got to wave 11 or 12, but I've only played it a few times. I don't know if that's good or not. I have nothing to gauge it against.
I'm sure we can put out a challenge to the Podnets Nation. Tell us how many waves you can get to.
Yeah, they'd probably say 12. What are you, in typing school? I mean, you might need to take a few more lessons. You might get to 30 and really shame me. When you're sitting there waiting for things to download, you know, I might pop that open and play a game or two.
All right. Well, there was a Podnets Pro tip of the week.
Two good tips back to back.
All right.
So let's get to the stack of email.
Okay. Who's doing that?
Bando, stop playing.
Oh, sorry. I'm back.
It's addicting. You can't stop.
It is. I was actually Googling how many levels there are in type. But anyways, okay. This is from Jonas Rulio. And he says, aloha, all. Sorry, I've already messed up. I've resubscribed to the show, and I'm going through the old back catalog of recent shows now that you're back online. I just received a 20% off code for Hitman Pro and Hitman Pro Alert. I've always had good results with the regular Hitman and their Kickstart product. I'm wondering, what are your several professional opinions on Hitman Pro Alert for desktop in addition to Norton? I'm a three-person shop, not a computer repairer, where one of us regularly needs fonts. That person's machine only has been infected seriously one time several years ago. I've since installed the Foolish IT Crypto Locker program on the Windows machines, along with the current Norton antivirus. I run Arch Linux on my machine. With all your talk about Crypto Locker variants and on an earlier show, I was thinking about adding the Hitman Pro Alert to a product to the mix. What do you think about the product compared to just antivirus alone, Jonas?
Well, Marvin, you're up.
Yep. Okay.
Oh, and I was going to defer to you since you had the Crypto Locker 2 weeks ago.
Did I tell you guys I got a Crypto Locker about a week ago, week and a half ago?
You did?
I not personally. No,
a client, right? Yeah, a client.
That's right. It was the Thor one. Yeah, we just wiped and reloaded.
What about the data?
They didn't care.
I love it when a client has no data.
She's like, nah, I got nothing. I mean, they lost some data, and we're going to work on backups with them. We're still talking about how we're going to do backups and make, you know, come in the right solution. But they didn't have a choice. The Thor was so new that there was nothing to talk about with it. So it was back to the email.
Well, their backup should be easy if they don't care about their data.
It's already installed.
All right, so back to Jonas's question.
All right, so Jonas's question, you're asking for my response first. Well, I actually, I have used Hitman Pro, but not Hitman Pro Alert. And probably the reason is I've had pretty good success with the regular tools that I'm using. And I don't know, maybe I should look at Hitman Pro Alert, but Hitman Pro is part of the toolkits that I use. Primarily the D7 is what I use. And of course, it's got, you know, several tools built in the malware section, the JRT, Hitman Pro, Kaspersky T, DSS Killer, Malwarebytes, which I don't use all of them all the time. The three that I use the most are the JRT and the ADW Cleaner, and then I use the malware scan, which actually will help me go through the registry and the folder locations of where most of the common infections occur, including the CryptoLocker stuff. So that's pretty much what I do. I have downloaded the Crypto Prevent from Foolish IT, but I have found that in my domain networks that it's just easier for me to do restrictions through root policy rather than installing Crypto Prevent on each computer. So that's probably all I can really address with the Hitman Pro and Hitman Pro Alert.
Yeah, I will agree with you. I also will use the ADW Cleaner. So I use the JRT, ADW Cleaner, and then Malwarebytes. I will use Hitman Pro as a last resort just because of the licensing issue where once you run it on one computer, it's only valid for 30 days. I don't know if there's ways around that, but you know, you're Jonas, you're asking about Norton versus, so you're asking kind of, in my opinion, you're asking two different questions here. Norton is for antivirus. That's its job. Whether or not, you know, so that's Norton's job, right? Hitman Pro and those are going to cover your malware, your spyware, your annoyances, your pop-ups. They're two different products for two different things.
I think he wants to run them both, though, right?
And that's, you can run them both. Yeah. There really is no problem in running them both. I don't run Norton personally, but I have other clients. I have clients, some clients that I work with on just a one-off thing. They do. It's not something that I've deployed to my managed clients.
Well, Norton is. I pulled that off of two stations today for that MX Toolbox issue I had.
Yeah, it's you, and especially, you know, since we're here, you know, watch those all-in-one products, whether it's Norton or AVG or McAfee, where they're this whole suite of stuff, because those will run into problems because they're scanning your emails and they're scanning your network and they're scanning stuff and they're intercepting stuff and they're reading and they're putting their own certs, you know, certifications in there. So just watch, be really mindful of those kind of all-in-one security suites, because they have a tendency to sometimes bog down the computers and actually make things a little bit worse, because they can send out emails and they can cause infections on themselves, and then you get in trouble with the issue that Marvin had earlier.
So I used to use Hitman Pro a while back, and I don't know why I stopped. And Hitman Pro Alert, it looks pretty good. I wouldn't mind using it, mainly because it's owned by Sophos, and I have faith in Sophos for their antivirus software programs. So I would think it'd be pretty good. I don't use Norton either, but the Hitman Pro Alert looks pretty good. The thing is, most of our clients were pushing toward not having the protection on the computers. We're switching more to have it on the gateway. So mm-hmm. we'll still have the managed antivirus on the computers, but we're more and more pushing toward the unified threat management through the WatchGuard, AV scanning at the gateway, and more protection on the router before it even comes into the network, rather than having it on the computers to protect them.
Right. Right. But him being such a small shop, he may not have that, especially if he's taking care of, home users. That's where I would really, stick with, that JRT, right. The JRT, the ADW cleaner, the Kaspersky, the Malwarebytes, and those you can get. You don't have to, they're D7 is a great tool. I, like Marvin, also use D7. I have also installed CryptoLocker on a couple of machines. It used to have some issues. It's gotten a little bit better. I install it on local machines that do not have a domain. If they're on a domain, then I will do group policies as well. I do know that right now, if you're looking for something, that you're not sure what antivirus to use, and because we've said, well, maybe Norton's not the best thing. Well, then what do I use? That's probably your question. You're wondering to yourself right now, yelling at the radio. Humblebundle.com/lifehackersoftwarebundle. It has a sale right now, and you can get, if you give them $15, it comes with Acronis True Image 17 and Bitdefender Antivirus Plus 2017. They're both a one-year subscription, but it's a $15. Pay what you want, but if you pay at least $15, you'll get those. And I know that I use BitLocker on a corporate level built into other products, and that may be something you may want to look at.
Did you say radio earlier?
I said radio because maybe like if you're listening,
I was gonna let that slide.
You and your kids don't sit around the radio listen to stuff at night. Then maybe kind of waiting for that talkie to turn on.
No, we sit around and watch the picture box.
Oh, so you guys are highfalutin.
We just take turns riding the donkey.
At least you have a donkey. I don't have a donkey.
Now, okay, I want to ask about the group policy that you use instead of Crypto Prevent. Which group policies are you using? I came across a list of ones that they said to use, but I found they caused more problems. And I tested the group policies on a few clients, and I tested just loading Crypto Prevent on all the computers at one place. And it's hard to tell which one works because neither one of them got any crypto,
right,
infections, but I found the ones with group policies had more problems. Like I had to go disable the policy to install Firefox
That is the problem, where if you do the group policies, it does restrict installations. So,
and I've gone and made exceptions for some. So sometimes I can make an exception to group policy and it works. Sometimes I make an exception and it doesn't work. So I have to disable the policy, install the software, re-enable the policy, which I find is a pain. But I didn't have to do that when I've loaded Crypto Prevent on the computers. It seems like it's smarter and it lets things go that should go through, like Firefox install, or there was something else. Maybe it was like a Peachtree update or something. Now it kept blocking over and over again.
I do know that Firefox was an issue, and when Crypto Prevent first came out, I talked to Nick Shaw directly about that, and we kind of went back and forth, and he did resolve that. So the issue is that in the Crypto Prevent installer that you would install, you can go in and update. Nick Shaw and his team pushes out updates. They resolve those. They make things. They make exceptions, right? So that always gets updates, whereas the group policy is just a wide, that's a pretty wide brush.
Yeah, I think if you're on a later version of CryptoPrevent, I think they're up to version 7-something.
And 8 just came out, I believe.
Well, CryptoPrevent always worked fine. It's the group policy settings that I had problems with.
Yeah, and the group policy settings are pretty wide, but you balance it out with, time going to each machine, time having to update each machine of their version of CryptoPrevent. I mean, there's the corporate version, which you can, that you can pay for and it stays updated. So, you just kind of take it on 100 computers that you're managing. Is it easier to install group policy and then tweak it when and if somebody needs it, or is it easier to go to each computer and install it and then make sure you have to keep those computers updated? It's a kind of a time return on investment issue.
So with one client that we had it, that we kept having to disable it, I just got rid of the group policy, and we added some features on the WatchGuard to help block that stuff.
Right. And I mean, CryptoPrevent came out when CryptoLocker first came out, that because this was new. And since then, there's been so many new revisions, and I think there's a lot of people out there, you know, a lot of clients that have started integrating this more into their systems.
Yeah, but I think to Matt's point, I mean, because I'm doing it a lot more also where I'm actually doing more on the firewall, the gateway, you know, mm-hmm. by doing mm-hmm. stuff there. And now with the RM tools, we now have, you know, web protection that is what we've been adding to each of the desktops and blocking, you know, all of the security stuff like the proxies and all of that stuff. So I think that's helped. So I haven't, you know, been doing as much with the group policy lately because I haven't had an infection in a while. So I've kind of lapsed on that and not been as, you know, tight with my customers.
I think our attack has changed. I don't think we don't need to do stuff locally on each machine anymore. Now, you know, just like you were saying, you just do it on the router. You're scanning all the traffic coming in, or you're keeping people from going to these sites that could potentially have these issues. So I think the way that we're attacking this has changed. It's not necessarily that you've been lax. That's my thought.
So I had a client who wanted to know why we should spend the money on the WatchGuard threat management when they could just use free antivirus, this and that. And I explained to them that it's best to block it before it comes into the network. Once it's in the network, you rely on your computer to block it. What if the computer doesn't block it? Once it's in, it's harder to block. And he didn't understand. But I know he likes Lord of the Rings. So I explained it to him like Lord of the Rings. And the battle at Helm's Deep, they really didn't want the orcs to get into the wall. They didn't want to breach the wall. They don't let them even in the castle. Once they're in, it's hard to get them out. So let's just keep them out. The firewall will keep them out. The computer lets them in and says, "We're gonna fight you here on the computer."
You, my friend, are a giant nerd, and I love that.
So let's win the battle at Helm's Deep, and let's just, you know, when they got in, it was hard to get them out.
They actually had to leave.
They breached, and once it breached, you got to fight them.
I was going to say, you know, in Matrix, you didn't want the machines to get to the dock.
You know, I don't think I saw the Matrix.
What?
It's been a long time for me. I've definitely seen Lord of the Rings more than I've seen the Matrix.
All
right. Well, it has an actor in there. I don't really care to see his movies.
I didn't know you didn't like Lawrence Fishburne.
I like Lawrence Fishburne.
Is it the other guy, the Mr.
Harry Moss?
Mr. Smith?
It's Keanu Reeves.
Oh, that's right. He's in that.
Yeah.
I like him. I think his best movie was Speed, hands down.
Speed? Oh, my God. That's so stupid. Oh. They should take a real bus and drive it off of an interstate and see what happens to it.
Well, I hope that answered your question, Jonas, or just made you all mind-boggled with Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, so I wouldn't. Yeah, anyway, back to that. Because it's owned by Sophos, I have faith in it. If I like Sophos.
Yeah. And I'm going to recommend that you go see John Wick 2 when it comes out.
I don't know what that is, but okay.
That's another one of his movies.
I'm guessing that was the first one.
Right, he's a candle maker. he makes candles for a living. It's a love story. It's a book written by Nicholas Sparks.
Oh my God, that sounds terrible. I think I just watched Speed again.
But wait, there was a Speed 2. You should watch that first.
Is there really a Speed 2?
Yeah, I didn't see it. But there is.
Oh my God.
I'm Googling
it. But it doesn't star him, though. She broke up with him.
Oh.
How can we make a sequel of Speed, make it better? Let's not have curious. That right there means it's better.
Oh, there was a Speed 2.
Yeah, on a boat.
I don't think I've ever seen this.
I don't think you should ever see it. All right, so...
Well, it has William Dafoe in it, though. Come on.
And Sandra Bullock. Yeah. Wait, she wasn't the first one, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah, she was the Wildcat.
Okay.
All right.
All right, so back to Podnuts Pro. Back to our regularly scheduled program.
I just Googled that... Speed 2, by the way.
Yeah. Did we finish our stack of email?
I think, did we? I think we did.
It's not a very big stack.
It wasn't a very big stack.
No. And everybody said their tips?
Sure.
I think I did. I can save some for next week. We'll keep going suspense.
Yeah, because we dropped the mic a long time ago. Now we're that drunk comedian that can't get off the stage.
Now, everyone's playing Z-Type anyway, and not really listening to us.
Stop listening to us a while ago.
That's right. All right. So with that in mind, why don't we go ahead and end off the show here and say goodbye to Keanu Reeves and Z-Type. And any last words, and we'll go from left to right, Mr. Obando.
Don't forget to use Google. I will get a percentage of all your searches.
And if you have any questions, comments, questions, complaints, podnutspro@podnuts.com. You can email us.
All right. And as per usual, we're going to end the show with our customary quote from one of our founding fathers, again with Benjamin Franklin. Tell me and I forget. Teach me and I remember. Involve me and I learn. Think about that, clones. I mean, hot nuts people. And with that, we bid you all a very good night.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.